reader, Evan.
Good morning. It's time to read the Mason City Globe Gazette for this day, Tuesday, February 25th. I'm Barb, and my partner at the microphone for the next hour is Sharon, and we're really pleased to be here with you. This broadcast is made possible through a partnership between the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service and 97.9 FM KCMR Radio. Some of the headlines on today's front page of the Mason City Globe Gazette are: Seniors Capstone Project Turns Into a Sports Team, Kensett Subject of State Audit, and Anastasia Features Mason City Graduate. The weather for today, this Tuesday, the 25th, the weather for today is cloudy and breezy in the afternoon, little or no sunshine with an average humidity of 80%, breezy during the evening. The high today will be 31, and tomorrow, tonight, will be 18 degrees. Tomorrow's high, Wednesday, will be 21 with a low of 5. Thursday, the high will be 22 with a low of 5. And Friday, the high of 21 with a low of 4. And on Saturday, sunny, not as cold, a high of 30 with a low of 17 degrees. So now for the first story on the front page of the Globe Gazette is Sharon.
Good morning. There's a large picture here of, and it's a colored picture, of Newman, Catholic High School. And this is spelled E-S-P-O-R-T-S. That's the name of the team. How do you pronounce that?
Esports.
Oh, esports. Okay. Team members. And they're in the tech room before class. This was on Monday. And the title of this is Seniors Capstone Project Turns Into Esports Team.
You know, like electronic email.
Okay.
E-sports. Okay.
Newman, I didn't get that. Newman Senior teammates build own gaming computers. It was time for practice at Newman Catholic High School. Like all good teams, the students talked openly about their record one-on-one. They talked about how their opponents out-strategized them at their last match and how they could better prepare for that in the future. They talked about what led to their win and how they could continue to build on that. Maybe practice a little more on blocking goals, except there was no field, no ball, no spectators. In fact, they don't even have to be in the same room as their opponents. But make no mistake, these kids use all the same skills as their peers who participate in traditional athletics. With their match last week against St. Ansgar and Bettendorf, Newman Catholic joined several schools in North Iowa forming an esports team. The team was the brainchild of student leader Alec Fry. All Newman seniors are required to do a capstone project, and Fry's, at the request of Newman's principal, Tony Adams, was to start an esports program. Yeah, I see that. I just can't get the get it turned here. Excuse me. With friends Braden Petrie and Grant Smith, Fry assembled a list of all the components needed to build 6 gaming computers. Once the school purchased those, Fry and his teammates built, yes, you read that right, the computers and rearranged the school's tech room to accommodate their practice. On this Monday morning, 6 of the 8 team members were gathered in the tech room, some practicing League of Legends, others Rocket League. Rocket League isn't tough to figure out. It's soccer with cars. League of Legends is another matter entirely. 5 players each adopt a character that makes up a team whose strategy is to defeat the other team. by destroying its nexus, a jewel-like icon that, predictably, is well-guarded. There is strategy needed for playing such a game, a fact the Newman Catholic team found out too late when taking on Bettendorf. That team had done its homework and found out which characters the Newman players excelled using and promptly banned them all, part of pre-match strategy, forcing Newman to pick players with whom they were much less familiar. It's all part of the mind game before the e-game. Some of these people have been playing League of Legends for years, said Nick Schmidt. While we've been playing like a month, added his teammate. Lindsay Nearing is Newman's technology director, not the coach. She said since these kids don't really need coaching. But Nearing said every skill a high school athlete uses can be found here among these students as well, including the hope of earning scholarship and or career. Senior Colin Kalash wanted to attend Grandview University, he said, and he hoped to earn a scholarship via esports, but the timeline was too late for him. So now I'm paving the way for my brother, Kalash said. He's in eighth grade and way better at League of Legends than I am. Esports has caught fire in North Iowa, with teams being fielded at most local schools and a statewide governing body. The High School Esports Association The season began last week and will run 8 weeks with 4 postseason weeks for the qualifying team. 2 Osage students recently learned they won scholarships to continue their education while playing esports in college. Waldorf University recently hired an esports coach with professional experience and plans to build an esports arena. And they all reported reading stories and seeing videos of professional gamers whose parents told them that gaming was not a viable option for a career and who are now making more than those parents. The Knights are already preparing for their next match, number one priority on their list, making sure they're boned up on the strengths and weaknesses of their opponents. We're going to be ready, Fry said. And there's a couple more pictures here, and their Newman Catholic High School esports team members also in another tech room. And I guess that's it.
Barb? Okay. Kensett was subject of state audit. This is by Jared McNett. Globe Gazette. This past Wednesday, February 19th, the Office of Iowa Auditor Rob Sand released 5 separate reports covering specific city, county, and commission activity across the state. One of those 5 was a periodontic examination of Kensett that looked at 1-year stretch from July 1, 2018 to June 30th, 2019. And what it found in that time are a number of issues that is asking the Worth County town to address, 22 findings, in fact. At issue for city officials of Kensett was how they segmented duties, how certain banking practices were lacking, how distributions exceeded budgeted amounts, whether or not certain government transactions represented a conflict of interest, city clerk reports not being prepared, and city council meeting minutes not being published in the accordance with the Iowa Code. In summarizing the issue at hand, Sand's release said that the city council has a fiduciary responsibility to provide oversight of the city's operations and financial transactions, and that this oversight is typically defined as the watchful and responsible care of a governing body exercising its fiduciary capacity. The issue with separating duties came up first in the auditor's list of issues with Kensett government practices and is one of the more sizable chunks of the report. According to the report, it is ideal for one individual to have control over each of the following areas: cash investments, receipts, disbursements, payroll, utility, journal entries, transfers, and debt. That said, the report did make sure to note that because of Kensett's relatively small size, its population is 260 people as of 2017, separation can be difficult with a small number of employees. Still, the report argued that the city should review its procedures to make sure internal control is as strong as possible. Multiple direct financial issues were noted in the auditor's report, including balances not lining up, funds not being transferred by proper procedure, and deficit balances being run. The report found that as of June 30, 2019, the city had deficit balances of $16,310, $53,233, and $17,112 in the special revenue, road use fund tax, and enterprise water and sewer funds, respectively. Its 2020 fiscal budget totaled $5.8 million. Its recommendation for the matter, which was not detailed, just said that the city should investigate alternatives to eliminate these deficits in order to return these funds to a sound financial position. It did have more to speak to with proper fund transference and how that could mitigate certain issues. According to the audit's findings, one approved transfer from the general fund to the special revenue road use fund tax addressed past balances was approved for $274,414, but the actual amount transferred was $413,638. The auditor's report then recommended that the city should make sure to approve all transfers by resolution prior to the actual transfer. The resolution should include a clear statement of the reasons for the transfer, each fund involved, and the amount, the report stated. As for balances not lining up, the report recommended that Kensett officials should make sure to reconcile bank and investment account balances with the general ledger on a monthly basis and to resolve any discrepancies in a timely fashion. It went further to say that when doing such a reconciliation, lists of outstanding checks should be prepared and kept for all the accounts and kept for all the accounts that an independent person should look over these reconciliations and then sign off on them. The City of Kensett worked with the four-team auditing group and, based on that report, provided the relevant materials needed to conduct the investigation. Kensett's government includes a mayor, five council members, a city clerk slash treasurer, and an attorney. None of them responded to calls made and the messages left for the story.
Okay. Anastasia features Mason City graduate. A Mason City native is returning to the Des Moines Civic Center stage in the Broadway touring production of Anastasia this week. Allison Ewing, a 1992 Mason City High School graduate, will appear as Countess Lily when it arrives in Iowa with shows Tuesday through Sunday. It's a really, really fun role, she said. There's a lot of physical comedy. Ewing's character, Countess Lily, comes into the play during the second act and is the lady-in-waiting to Anastasia's grandmother, Dowager Empress.
Dowager
Empress. She said, while her character is supposed to be formal and put together, when she rekindles a relationship with a man, she lets loose. We have a huge, rowdy number, she said. She's the comic relief of the show. Ewing last appeared at the Civic Center as Lulu in Roundabout Theater Company's Cabaret in 2016. She also has performed on Broadway in Mamma Mia, National Tours of An American in Paris, Cabaret, Flashdance, and Mamma Mia, as well as more than a dozen regional productions in TV and film appearances. I love that I get to go into work at night and for 3 hours do this wonderful thing in front of a large audience and go home at night and think about how many people I entertained, Ewing said. I'm always extremely grateful for that opportunity. Ewing credits her childhood involvement in Stebbins Children's Theater and Mason City High School show choir, and orchestra for her career in singing, acting, and dance. They were all important in getting a healthy start and developing a passion, she said. Ewing said surrounding herself with a good support system of family and friends has also been significant throughout her career and would encourage those pursuing similar careers to do the same. Anastasia features a book by celebrated playwright Terrence McNally, a new score by Stephen Flaherty and Lynn Ahrens, and direction by Tony Award-winning director Darko Trejnet. McNally, Flaherty, and Ahrens last collaborated on the Tony Award-winning musical Ragtime. The show transports the audience from the twilight of the Russian Empire to the euphoria of Paris in the 1920s as a brave young woman sets out to discover the mystery of her past. Pursued by a ruthless Soviet officer determined to silence her, Anya enlists the aid of a dashing con man and a lovable ex-aristocrat. Together, they embark on an epic adventure to help her find home, love, and family. The musical Anastasia completed its 2-year Broadway run on March 31st of 2019 after 808 regular and 34 preview performances at the Broadhurst Theater. In March, the musical's first national tour will stop in Oklahoma, Arizona, Kentucky, and Minnesota, and it will conclude its 2-year run in August. Ewing said she plans to return to Iowa after the show's run to attend the Iowa State Fair, visit with high school friends, and go camping with her mother. It's going to be fun, she said. Ewing said her mother, who resides in Mason City, and her father, who lives in Des Moines, as well as friends, family, and a busload of individuals from her mother's church, plan to attend the show this week. Anastasia is the sixth show in the 2019-2020 Willis Broadway series at the Des Moines Civic Center. It's a beautiful production that blends special effects and cinematography with this wonderful story, and the singing and acting and the costumes cannot be beat, she said. It's an outstanding Broadway production that is worth the trip. For ticket information about Anastasia, visit www.dmpa.org or call 515-246-2300.
Christensen named Iowa Supreme Court Chief Justice, and there is a photo of the Iowa Supreme Justice Susan Christensen opens her discussion with a short autobiography on her road to the Supreme Court during her talk to the students at the Forest City High School. Justices of the Iowa Supreme Court on Monday selected Justice Susan Christensen of Harlan to serve as their chief. Christensen will succeed former Chief Justice Mark Cady, who died November 15th. She becomes the second woman to serve as Chief Justice of the Iowa's highest court. I am honored to be selected by my colleagues as Chief Justice of the Iowa Supreme Court, Christensen said in a statement. 3 months ago, our court faced a sudden crisis with the unexpected death of Chief Justice Cady. Justice David Wiggins, who plans to retire in March, has served as the acting Chief Justice since Cady's death. I am deeply appreciative of the immediate leadership by acting Chief Justice David Wiggins, Christensen said. He provided the stability to push forward with the court's work while the judicial branch and the entire state grieved for the Cady family. As Chief Justice, I will maintain my passion for child welfare and juvenile justice and do my best to lead Iowa's judiciary in a manner which provides all 99 counties with fair and impartial justice. Christensen was appointed to the Iowa Supreme Court in 2018 by Governor Kim Reynolds. She will be up for retention in November. Her father, Jerry Larson of Harland, was the longest-serving Supreme Court justice in Iowa history, from 1978 to 2008. In addition to judicial duties and writing opinions, the Chief Justice presides over oral arguments and court conferences, sets the court's oral argument schedule, and delivers the State of the Judiciary Address to the Iowa General Assembly each January. As administrative head of the Iowa Judicial Branch, the Chief Justice presides over the Judicial Council and works for the State Court Administrator to manage judicial branch operations with a fiscal 2020 state appropriation of $181 million, 334 judicial officers, and more than 1,700 employees in all 99 counties. The Chief Justice also appoints members to the Supreme Court committees and task forces to propose policies and rules of procedure and practice. Before her Supreme Court and appointment, Christensen was appointed to serve as District Associate Judge in 2007 and as a District Court Judge in 2015. Before becoming a judge, she practiced law in Harland for 16 years. Christensen earned her bachelor's degree from Judson College in 1988 and her law degree from Creighton University School of Law in 1991. Marcia Ternus was Iowa's first female Chief Justice from 2006 to 2010. Sharon?
Okay, poll. Majority of Iowans favor tax changes similar to Reynolds' proposal. This is from Des Moines. A slight majority of Iowans favor tax changes similar to the plan Governor Kim Reynolds has proposed that would raise the sales tax to pay for mental health and other services and reduce taxes on income and property. That's according to a poll released today, Monday, by Iowans for Tax Relief. The poll found that 51.8% of Iowans surveyed said they would support a plan to cut income and property taxes while increasing the sales tax rate by a penny. But a wider margin, 57.4%, said they agree with the governor's plan. It calls for shifting the cost of mental health services from counties, which rely on property taxes, to the state, which would use revenue from income and sales taxes to pay for those services. Reynolds has launched a statewide tour to build public support for her Invest in Iowa plan to revamp Iowa's tax code and provide a reliable, sustainable funding source for mental health services and quality of life improvements that are part of the National Resources Trust Fund approved by voters 10 years ago. We are seeing the same positive support in town halls across the state, and I look forward to continuing the conversation about the Invest in Iowa Act, Reynolds said about the poll. Iowans want lower income and property taxes. They want us to invest in priorities like mental health, water quality, and quality of life. People have supported these ideas for years. Now we have an opportunity to get it done. She described public response as just phenomenal when she taped an appearance on Iowa PBS Iowa Press last week. Legislators so far have not shown the same enthusiasm. It's a very difficult process to work through, House Speaker Pat Grassley, Republican New Hartford, said about the plan. Is there a willingness to raise the sales tax? That's where it starts. And then if you do, what what do you do with it? It's a big piece of legislation. But Reynolds thinks the plan will gain traction in the legislature. I think Iowans are going to ultimately be the ones to convince legislators to do it, Reynolds said. Although her plan calls for a once-in increase in the state sales tax, it's an overall tax reduction because of cuts to property and income taxes, Reynolds said. A one-cent sales tax increase would raise about $540 million, according to a Department of Revenue estimate. I had no interest in raising taxes, she added, so I said from the get-go, if we're going to take a look at finally funding the Natural Resources Trust, then it has to be an overall net tax reduction, and the bill does that. Reynolds' tax plan contained in the Invest in Iowa Act would implement a two-step income tax cut to take Iowa's top personal rate down to 5.5% in 2023, reduce the mental health property tax levy, and raise sales tax by 1 cent, funding the voter approval Natural Resources Trust Fund. A December report released by Tax Education Foundation, Iowa, and the Buckeye Institute modeled four tax scenarios that each increase the sales tax while reducing income tax rates. Each scenario revealed clear benefits to Iowa's economy and substantial tax savings for families and businesses, according to Iowans for Tax Relief.
Iowa agency director resigns after less than a year on the job. The director of the Iowa Department of Administrative Services announced Monday he would resign after less than a year in that position. Jim Kurtenbach said his resignation would be effective March 6th. Governor Kim Reynolds named him to head the agency in June of 2019. In a written statement, Kurtenbach said that during his tenure, the department's culture had improved and is now customer-focused and outcome-driven. The department's previous director, Janet Phipps Burkhead, left after failing to win Senate confirmation to continue in the job. With these achievements in place, now is the appropriate time for me to return to life as a private citizen and to a new professional challenge, Kurtenbach said. Reynolds, in a statement, thanked Kurtenbach for service during an important transition time for the agency. The Department of Administrative Services handles human resource, maintains the Capitol grounds and buildings, buys state vehicles, and manages state payroll. Earlier, Kurtenbach served two terms in the Iowa House before losing in the 2006 general election. He was Republican Party of the Iowa chairman from 2009 to 2011. He resigned as chief information officer of Iowa State University in November of 2017.
I think we have time for one more article before we get to the obituaries. New cruise riverboat passes sea trials, set for April cruise, and this is from New Orleans. The American Queen Steamboat Company says its newest cruise paddlewheeler has passed its second sea trial and will make its first cruise in April from New Orleans to Memphis. A 245-passenger American Countess went through the intracoastal waterway from Houma, where Gulf Island Shipyard cut it in half and added 60 feet to its length, to Morgan City, Louisiana, as part of its trial, the company said in a news release. The ship is now 318 feet long. It will move to New Orleans in late February for 4 weeks of finishing touches. The American Countess was built on the hull of the Canesville Queen, which was part of Harrah's Casino in Council Bluff, Iowa, for 17 years before being scrapped in 2013. American Queen Steamboat Company, based in New Albany, Indiana, has three other paddle wheel cruise boats. One works in the Pacific Northwest. The American Countess will be the third traveling along the Mississippi River and its tributaries. It is to be christened April 4th and to begin its first cruise April 5th.
Today in our remembrances and obituaries, we have three: Ralph Norris Ossenhus, Eleanor Shallock, Mavis H. Felland. Ralph Norris Ossenhus, 64, of Mason City, passed away Wednesday, February 19th, at his home. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, February 28th, at Hogan Bremermore Colonial Chapel, 123 3rd Street Northeast in Mason City, with the Reverend Dan Garrett officiating. Burial will be at Memorial Park Cemetery in Mason City. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the service at the church. Hogan Bremermore Colonial Chapel is in charge of the arrangements. Their phone number is 423-2372.
Eleanor Shallock Osage, 99, died Saturday at Faith Lutheran Home in Osage. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 Saturday at Trinity Lutheran Church in Osage, with Pastor Bruce Kaltwasser officiating. Burial will be in the Osage Cemetery. Visitation will be from 9:30 to 10:30 Saturday at the church. Buett Funeral Home in Osage is in charge of arrangements.
Mavis H. Felland, age 95, of Lake Mills, died on Saturday, February 22nd, at her home in Lake Mills. A memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. Wednesday, February 26th, at Zion Lutheran Church, 4527 Finch Avenue, Lake Mills, with the Reverend Anthony R. Scalisi officiating. A gathering of friends and family will be held 1 hour prior to the services at the church on Wednesday. Burial of cremains will take place in church cemetery on Wednesday. Memorials may be directed to the Zion Lutheran Church and Cemetery. You can contact the family with online condolences at www.middlestadtfuneralhome.com or by calling 641-592-0221.
And that is the end of the
obituaries. That's the end of the obituaries for today.
The next article is Ice Cover Takes Deep Dip on Great Lakes. Icy, snow-covered lakes are a normal part of Midwest winters, but Great Lakes ice cover is taking a big dip this year in Michigan and other states, weather experts say. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Great Lakes Environmental Research Laboratory found that as of last week, the Great Lakes ice cover was 17.6%. Last year at this time, the ice cover hovered around 67%, according to the National Weather Service in Duluth, Minnesota. In the winter of 2019, Michigan experienced a record low temperature of minus 14 in late January. But this winter has seen warmer than usual temperatures that are in line with the advance forecast for normal or slightly warmer than usual temperatures. Even as recent as Valentine's Day, the figure was closer to 17%, with water widely visible. Typically around February 14th, Great Lakes ice cover on average is 41%, NASA's Earth Observatory said. Why the change? An ice climatologist at NOAA's Great Lakes Environmental Research Laboratory attributed it to warmer air temperatures this season, according to Earth Observatory. While Metro Detroit has had seasonable conditions last week, that's set to change in the coming days. But the lower ice coverage is not unusual. Since 1995, the Great Lakes have four times hit low averages for the entire winter of 14.3% in 1998, 11.9% in 2002, 12.9% in 2012, and 19.4% as recently as 3 years ago, according to NOAA statistics. During the same 25-year period, there were great ice cover spikes. They have ranged from 80.3% in 2003 to a record 92.5% in 2014, nearly 89% in 2015, as well as about 81% last year. The reduced ice cover is the result of warmer lake temperatures. As of last Thursday, the mean surface temperature for Lake Superior was 33.7 degrees and 37 as the means whole lake. According to the Great Lakes Environmental Research Center, last year those figures were 32.5 and 36.5 respectively.
The coronavirus continues its worldwide spread. This is from Seoul, South Korea. The new virus took aim at a broadened swath of the globe Monday, with officials in Europe and the Middle East scrambling to limit the spread of the outbreak that showed signs of stabilizing at its Chinese epicenter, but posed new threats far beyond. In Italy, authorities set up roadblocks, called off soccer matches, and shuttered sites including the famed La Scala Opera House. In Iran, the government said 12 people had died nationwide, while five neighboring counties, Iraq, Kuwait, Bahrain, Oman, and Afghanistan, reported their first cases of the virus, with all those infected having links to Iran. The number of people sickened by the coronavirus topped 79,000 globally, and wherever it sprung up, officials rushed to try to contain it.
And looking back, today is Tuesday, February 25th, the 56th day of 2020, and there are 310 days left in the year. Today's highlight in history: on February 25th, 1964, Muhammad Ali, then known as Cassius Clay, became world heavyweight boxing champion as he defeated Sonny Liston in Miami Beach. And also on this date in 1793, President George Washington held the first cabinet meeting on record at his Mount Vernon home. Attending were Secretary of State Thomas Jefferson, Treasury Secretary Alexander Hamilton, Secretary of War Henry Knox, and Attorney General Edmund Randolph. In 1836, inventor Samuel Colt patented his revolver. In 1862, Nashville, Tennessee became the first Confederate state capital to be occupied by the North during the Civil War. In 1901, United States Steel Corporation was incorporated by J.P. Morgan. And the last one, in 1913, the 16th Amendment to the United States Constitution, giving Congress the power to levy and collect income taxes, was declared in effect by Secretary of State Philander Chase Knox.
Barb? Okay, we'll move on to sports now. We'll start with girls basketball. Free throws are the key defense in Mason City victory. Dietz scored 30 points in regional semifinals. This is by Jerry Smith of the Globe Gazette. In her final game at Mason City High School, senior Anna Dietz scored 30 points as the girls' basketball team bookended two dominant quarters in its 68-48 victory over Spencer on Saturday in the Class 4A Regional 2 semifinals at home. While the Mohawks struggled mightily from outside the three-point arc in the first half, hitting just 2 of 18 shots, the defense was able to keep Spencer in check to allow the Mason City to pad its first half lead. The Mohawks started the third quarter the way it ended the second, struggling to put points on the board, and held only a 42-35 lead going into the final frame. In the fourth quarter, Mason City relied on its free throw shooting to pad the lead and finish with a 20-point win. For the game, the Mohawks were 19 for 21 from the line. Dietz was 11 of 12 from the free throw line to pace the Mohawks. We struggled offensively in the first half, shooting 2 of 18 from the arc, said Mohawks leader coach Kurt Klassen. Our defense kept us in at the middle two quarters, and we did a great job of making free throws in the fourth quarter. In addition to Dietz's 30 points and game-high 6 steals, sophomore Jada Williams had a big night, scoring 18 points on a 6 of 9 shooting. She was a perfect 6 for 6 from the free throw line. Senior Jada Winter finished with 9 points in her final home game. Senior Allie Rood had a team-high 10 rebounds for Mason City, which had a decided advantage on the boards over Spencer. The Mohawks play Ballard, 21-1, at 7 p.m. Tuesday in Huxley for the regional title. We're excited to head to Huxley on Tuesday to take on an excellent Ballard team, Clausen said. We hope to have a large crowd of Mohawks down to cheer us on. And there is a photo of Mason City senior Anna Dietz protecting the ball as she weaves through the Fort Dodge defense on February 14th in Mason City for a win.
Okay, and this is from Osage. There's a huge picture here of Osage coach Brent Jennings, and he's carrying the Class 2A State Wrestling Championship trophy on Sunday at the Osage High School. And the title, "We Have an Awesome Community Behind Us." It was pretty cool. We have an awesome community behind us. It has been way too long since we brought a title back here, said junior Spencer Mooberry, who was a state runner-up at the Iowa State Wrestling Championship held Thursday through Saturday in Des Moines. Mooberry and his 5 teammates, seniors Zach Williams, Joe Sullivan, and Ryan Adams, junior Avery Abin, and freshman Nicholas Fox, and their fellow teammates were escorted into Osage by a caravan of vehicles and honored at a pep rally at the newly built Osage Gymnasium on Sunday afternoon. It seemed Osage's best chances of placing high in the state standings were on Wednesday when they competed in the state dual meet prior to the individual wrestling tournament, which was held Thursday through Saturday evening. Osage was defeated in the opening round of the duels by Davenport Assumption 40-26, then came back to defeat Humboldt 52-18 and Winterset 42-33 to finish fifth in the 2A state dual meet. On Thursday, Osage's 6 individual qualifiers took to the mat to wrestle in individual competition. Fox, a freshman, wrestled at 120 pounds and who led the state with 39 pins, moved through to the final round of competition where he finished in second place, as did junior Mooberry in the 170 pound class. Sullivan, a senior, wrestled back to win third in his 126 pound bracket, and senior Williams, who wrestled at 160 pounds, and junior Abin, who wrestled at 132 pounds, both wrestled back to fifth place finishes. Entering the individual wrestling tournament, Osage was not seen as the prime contender for the individual team title, as West Delaware led the field with 12 qualifiers for the first round on Thursday afternoon. Friday, it looked like the best we could win was third place in team scoring, said Osage head coach Brent Jennings. As the rounds progressed, West Delaware's chances began to fade, and the Osage athletes began to pile up team bonus points because of their falls. In the end, Osage wrestlers piled up 18 bonus points for their pins, which was the deciding factor in gaining the title. In addressing the enthusiastic crowd, which later gave him a standing ovation, Jennings said, "This year, I told the team, you never know when someone might stub their toes, and you have to be ready." And this year, they were ready. Jennings then complimented each of the six young men on their accomplishments. "Speaking of Adams," Jennings said, "we often talk about how far he has come since he started, and he has done a great job. Williams has been a state qualifier for 4 years, and three times he has placed." Speaking of Sullivan, Jennings commented, "In seventh grade, his mother didn't want him to come out because he seldom won. But between then and now, he has worked his tail off. Abin sat out until mid-January due to injury and came back fired up and ready to go. Fox got to wrestle in the big show, and he shows he has nerves of steel. Spencer Mooberry will come back next year, and I know he will be full bore." Jennings, who had led Osage to state team dual championships in 2001 and 6, also praised his coaching staff. "I've got a great group of assistant coaches. I could not ask for better assistance." During the ceremony, Kurt Angel, who was a member of Osage's last team to win the individual team state title in 81, came from the audience and presented a t-shirt he had kept over the past 39 years. He taped out 1981 and replaced it with 2020. Angel told the six young men after the rally, "No matter what, you are forever state champions." Prior to 1981, Osage teams had won individual titles in 1940 and 1965. Superintendent Barb Schwammann, who is a member of the Board of Control for the IHSAA, had the honor of presenting both the fifth place 2A state dual meet trophy and the first place individual team trophy to her own school's athletes. "I want to praise Coach Jennings and his staff for all the time and dedication they have put in for the students' athletes," she said. "These students are great in the classroom and very involved in extracurricular activities. I also want to thank our community for their support." The athletes echoed Schwammann's words of thanks for the community's support. Fox expressed how much fan support meant to him. "It was pretty exciting making the finals. The people were pretty loud and excited in the stands."
Continuing with some of the state wrestling news, this is from Mason City, and there's a photo of the Mason City senior Cullen Shriver competing against Fort Dodge senior Carson Taylor Saturday during the championship round of the Iowa State Wrestling Championship in Wells Fargo Arena in Des Moines. Shriver captures third state title. Mason City senior dominates in 126-pound final. With a blow of a whistle, it became official. Cullen Shriver, three-time state champion. In Saturday's Class 3A 126 state title match, the Mason City senior got off a quick start against Fort Dodge senior Carson Taylor. At 1 minute 41 seconds, Shriver scored a takedown against Taylor to take a 2-0 lead. He earned another at 1 minute 1 second and led 4.2 at the end of the first period. The second period was identical in result as Shriver scored four more points via takedown to secure a 9-4 victory. As the referee raised his right arm, Shriver pointed toward the Mason City crowd and raised his hands in celebration. "I'm just grateful for everything that has happened and everything that I've had to push through the last year and a half," Shriver said. "It's been a long journey, and there's been a lot of stuff going on that hasn't gone my way. It feels good to get past that and get this last one." Shriver has been dealing with a shoulder injury for the past several months and sat out for a significant part of the season before the district tournament. After all that he has been through over the past two seasons, with a shoulder injury costing him a possible state title last season, the victory meant a lot. "He's a special athlete and a special person," Mason City coach Dusty Rhodes said. "He did everything right so that he could overcome those things. With a setback he has had this year, It was disappointing, but he's handled that adversity with grace. He does things right, and he really perseveres. Shriver won the state title in both his freshman and sophomore seasons, but a shoulder injury suffered in the 2019 quarterfinals cost him a shot at a four-state title. With twin brother and fellow University of Iowa commit, Colby looking on, Cullen again earned the state's highest wrestling champion honor. After the match, he stood atop the awards podium and looked out at the packed crowd at Wells Fargo Arena, a champion once again. For Rhodes, watching a Mason City wrestler snag a title never gets old. You're just excited for the kids, excited for the family, and you're excited for everyone that has been around him, Rhodes said. It's the pinnacle of the Iowa high school wrestling. I know Cullen has been very much looking forward to today. With his high school career over and a Division I college career coming on soon, Shriver has a lot to look forward to. Before any of that happens, Saturday night was for celebration and a dream trip to Zombie Burger. It's where he should be, Rhodes said. He's had to fight through some things, and he's had some bumps in the road. That kid's a fighter, and he earned a state title, which he deserved. It's great.
All right. Clear Lake girls use fourth quarter run to down Okoboji. And there's a little picture here. Clear Lake's Chelsea Hulk drives in for a layup in the Lions' dominating 65-47 win over Okoboji on Saturday in Algona. Lions clinch berth into Class 3A state tourney. The Clear Lake girls basketball team hoisted a number of state tournament qualifying banners on the wall over the past decade. On Saturday, the number 2 ranked Class 3A Lions started a new decade in the same fashion as they dominated for most of the second half in a 65-47 win over 7th rated Okoboji in a regional final and secured another spot in the Class 3A field. Our depth got us this win, Clear Lake coach Bart Smith said. They are all playing with poise. Everyone is contributing. Free throw shooting and the benches figured heavily, heavily over the course of a game that featured 50 fouls and saw several players on both squads limited by foul trouble. The Lions took full advantage of their chances as they made 21 of 24 shots from the free throw line over the final three quarters. Both teams played outstanding defense early, but after a run early in the third quarter, the Pioneers seemed poised to put the game out of reach. As it has all season, though, Clear Lake responded with a run over the middle portion of the third quarter and took a 7-point lead into the fourth. The Lions then went on an 11-2 run in the early stages of the final quarter, and the lead ballooned to 18 before both teams turned the game over to the reserves. Chelsea Hulk scored 12 of her team high 15 points in the second half of Clear Lake, or for Clear Lake. Sarah Faber finished with 12, including an 8 of 8 performance at the free throw line. Allie Malsby came off the bench to add 10. I am getting much more comfortable every game, Malsby said. The Clear Lake bench finished with 21 points. For Faber and the Lions seniors, the victory marks the third time in their careers that they advanced to the state tournament. Still, there is a sense that there is some unfinished business. Despite all of the recent state appearances, the Lions have never won a first-round game in the school's history. We had a players' meeting earlier in the week, Faber said. We need to break the curse. Clear Lake enters the tournament with a 22-2 overall mark and will play against Assumption on March 2nd in the first round of the state tournament. Still, 7 of the top 9 rated teams in Class 3A survived regional play, including the top 6. So the Lions will again need to be on top of their game if they hope to reach the semifinals and beyond. All right, well, that brings us to the end of the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Tuesday, February 25th. Your readers have been Barb and Sharon. This broadcast has come to you through a partnership between the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service and 97.9 FM KCMR Radio. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of IRIS or KCMR. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned for today's reading of the Des Moines Register. You are listening to IRIS, your 24-hour radio reading service. Have a great day.